All righty, everybody. I'm super excited, super stoked. Not because I'm being biased and it's my favorite podcast, my own. What if it did work? I've got with me a legendary man, a man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Kelly Shaw. Kelly Shaw, he's a speaker, coach, sales trainer, and CEO of the J Group. He has a passion for sales and salespeople. He's been in sales for over 40 years. He's been teaching other sales professionals for over 25 years and has a thriving sales practice today. Kelly's traveled internationally to speak to thousands of students of sales, not only educating them, but also helping them discover sales and realize their full passion and potential. He's trained and managed in multiple industries, from men's and women's clothing, automotive dealerships, boat dealerships, and financial services. Mr. Shaw, the pleasure is all mine. Welcome, brother. How's it going?
Thank you, bro. Hey, Omar, it's my pleasure, man. Anytime I can be on your podcast, I look forward to it. I'm excited. And well, let's get to it.
You want to know something amazing and something incredible? I used to be horrible in sales, and not just selling, because you and I spoke earlier. Everything revolves around sales. I had this fear of rejection growing up, man. I couldn't even ask out a girl on a date because, oh my gosh, the Miami Herald would find out. This is the whole city of Miami, South Florida. I'd probably have to wear a scarlet letter. And that lack of faith, that lack of confidence, that fear of rejection just bled out until I finally, one day, I got off my ass and realized everything's a sale. No is just no, right?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I kind of have a similar story. When I grew up, I'm British, so I came to the States not only with a little bit of a lisp, but a foreign accent. And I was actually in high school, I was only 4'11". And I wrestled 101. 107 was the heaviest I ever wrestled. So not only was I short, I was skinny. And I honestly couldn't talk to people, and it would scare me to death to even ask a girl on a date. So I totally understand that. And it took one of my teachers forcing me to take a debate class just to be able to get in front of three or four people and actually talk. In fact, I remember applying for my very first retail job, and the gal told me, "Kelly, I could never hire you. There's nothing about you that says sales. You didn't look me in the eye. You didn't shake my hand properly. Your fingernails don't look good. There's nothing about you that says sales." She goes, "I know there's something inside of you that wants to come out, but you need to go learn sales." Sales did not come naturally to me. In fact, people tell me all the time, "Oh, you're a natural salesperson. You make it look so easy." I go, "Man, that's because I put in years of hard work. It took me a long time to get good."
Yeah, but I mean, you had the English accent, right?
Yeah, that worked on girls when I was about 18 to 20.
Okay, right? Yeah, because I was going to say, dude, with James Bond, I mean, there hasn't been a time period. I mean, we're still fascinated. We're fascinated with the royal family. I mean, I remember being a little kid. There was only three networks, but, you know, the whole world had to watch Lady Di get married to Prince, well, to King Charles now. So, I mean, they might have thrown the tea overboard, but we, ever since King George and on, man, we've been in like awe. So that must have been just a hang up, though, before you turned 18, though, right? That you sounded different, that you're out. You were completely in a different element. Was that
what? No, actually, that didn't really start till I came out of the Marine Corps. I went in the Marine Corps at 17 years old. My mother had to sign papers to let me in early. So like the day after I graduated, man, I was in boot camp getting ready for Vietnam. That was 1971. And I came out of the Corps in 73, was a carpenter for a while. And in 74, I tried to get into sales and was turned down, went to a Dale Carnegie course on sales and public speaking, and changed my life.
Well, I don't see the shingle. Because you did you go with the other famous graduate, Mr. Warren Buffett?
You know, I've admired Warren for a long time. In fact, I used to have Berkshire A and B back in the days when I thought it was overpriced at about $10,000 a share.
Now, I hope you buy and hold on that, man, because it's the only thing that's still hanging steady, man. Our president decided to give everybody a huge discount, those sitting in on cash these days.
Well, I'm thinking stocks and crypto are on sale right now. I'm thinking about buying more.
Now's the time to buy. But I was always fascinated. I've read the books with Dale Carnegie, How to Influence People. Now, I always just thought it was just Warren Buffett just being Warren Buffett when he said the only thing he has hanging up on his wall was the certificate from there. Now, right. Is that a true? Was it that impactful to you as well?
Yeah, it really was. First off, in the book, well, not only when you're in class do you read the books, but I mean, you learn to interact. You have to get up and speak impromptu in front of people. You go through a lot of practice, drilling and rehearsing to, you know, just being able to communicate and deal with people one-on-one and in one-to-many. And then, of course, I went through the public speaking course because I was petrified to talk to people, bro. I mean, I would literally, when I was in high school, if I had to get up in front of people, I would almost start crying. It was a bad deal. But yeah, it was impactful. I mean, it got me started. I wouldn't say it's the most impactful in my whole life, but since it got me started on the road, not only to self-improvement, but to understand and really want to like meet and get to know about people. I think that's one thing they talk about in How to Win Friends and Influence People. And this gets back to some of the old sales trainers, like Og Mandino and all those guys, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Norman Vincent Peale, big Christians who were really all about serving and getting to know other people and doing the right thing for them.
I agree. But Kelly, I got to ask you this question. Why is it everybody knows Zig Ziglar's quotes? And it's so cute. Sometimes we put them up on posters or we put it up on social media. But we don't live the words. Actions speak louder than words, but usually we all love his words. If you want to be successful, help others find success. And I know you're walking the walk because you're on a mission to help 10,000 entrepreneurs. But so many people, and Zig Ziglar is, to me, not only the Mount Rushmore of guys on how to sell, but also personal development. But yet, we're not really aligned with his mission.
Yeah, you know, it's Omar, I tell you, it's really funny. You know, I hear a lot of guys today bad-mouthing old-time sales, right? Or, you know, old-school sales techniques. Yet whenever they reference old-school sales techniques, I don't know what the heck they're referencing other than maybe old-school car dealer techniques.
Bingo, that's it. That's it. Hey, let me go speak to my manager. Oh man. Yeah. I don't know how I'm letting you have this deal. That's not sales, man. That's manipulation.
Yeah.
You're talking about that. The problem with sales is you're going to probably agree with this. Everybody has this cliche that either you're selling timeshare or you're selling cars. And then that's it. Not the whole world revolves around sales.
Yeah. I forget the quote. I forget which famous speaker said this, but, you know, way back in the day, for the life of me, I'm having a brain fade right now. But, you know, it's a very famous author wrote very long time ago. This is probably in the 20s that everything in life is sales. You know, I mean, it's clear from the fact that when I saw my wife, I went, oh, my God, it's showtime. Boy, you better put on a show because, you know, she's a keeper. And if you want to get her and keep her, but you got to put on a show. And, you know, whether it's trying to have your kids do the right things or to take responsibility in their lives or to get good grades or to do great on the soccer pitch. Bottom line is that's all about sales, right? Getting them to pay attention in school and do the right things, look out for their friends and other people. You know, it's amazing. But again, I think most people don't realize that realistically. And I think you said at the very beginning, everything in life is sales. Everything from the job you get to the promotion you want to the house you want to live in. It's all about sales.
Well, the more you're able to connect with the other person and the more you can understand their world, the better and the more impactful. And yes, sales. I had to sell your people to have you on my show, and it was vice versa. And before we started, you said it best. I had to sell my wife. You had to sell her on the first date. You had to sell her afterwards. You know, and listen to this, guys. The sales process, when you call or you text right after, that would be called a follow-up. Correct?
Correct, man.
I mean, if you had dinner with your wife and, you know, you didn't follow up till like 90 days later, very doubtful there would have been a second, third, fourth date, you know?
Yeah, there would have probably been somebody else involved in that life other than me. So yeah,
she would have forgotten. You would have had to pitch her all over again.
You know, Omar, you said something there about you know, getting about the other person when you're in sales. You know, I think the thing is, a lot of people look at sales as just an avenue to make a lot of money, and I don't think a lot of people make the greatest sale in the world, which is that sale to themselves. About themselves as a person, the product or service that they're representing, the company they're representing, whether it's their company or a company that they work for. And I find a lot of salespeople don't even buy their own product. Like currently, my wife and I help run a real estate team because I'm active in sales every day. And we run kind of a unique lease with right to purchase program, but it's like, if we're going to do this, then we've got to go through the process ourselves. Even though we own other homes, we need to go through the process. We need to buy our own product. We need to know exactly what our clients are going to go through when they're filling out the application, when they move into the home, if they've got something wrong with the home. And if it's the right thing to do, we've got to steer the people in that direction. If it's not the right thing to do, we got to just like let them go and stay in touch and have a sincere desire to actually, one, get to know and understand that person, and number two, do the right thing.
Well, to me, if it's a win-win, which means do the right thing, you're solving someone else's problem and they're paying you for that.
Correct.
That's a sale. That's a win-win. Right. Manipulation is, guess what? I've got timeshare. And your kid's not going to know what you got them for Christmas next year, but 30 years from now, they'll be like saying, "Mom and Dad, thank you. And thank you for giving me all these excessive junk fees and these fees that I have to pay on a monthly basis because you willed it for me." You see, that to me, that's you manipulated the situation, because that's an emotional sale, correct? Right. But it's not a win-win. Everybody knows, but they still buy it because it's an emotional sell.
Right. You're trying to buy moments in time and memories for your family and your kids.
And you know, you're going to be significant. You're going to be the hero. Everybody right. wants to be the hero. You will be you will be Ward Cleaver. You will be Mr. Cleaver. You will be Mr. Mike Seaver. You'll be all these famous dads. That's a manipulation, because the only person that wins out of that is Wyndham or whatever corporation and the sales guy.
Correct.
And that's not a sale to me. I always tell people, selling, yes. If I'm like, hey, I've got this program that'll condense your time, that'll help you scale your business. And it's a proven method, and it helps that person save time and save money in the process. That's a sale. That's a win for the client, and that's a win for me. What you're doing right now is you're helping, you're impacting, and selling can be impactful. That's why Zig Ziglar, the OG of sales too, if you want to help enough people, help solve their problems, and it'll come back to you.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I think you kind of hit it on the head when you say it's a win-win. I know when I'm working with my staff, I always tell them, we've got to make sure that when we're negotiating all these deals, everybody's going to come out on top feeling good. Like everybody, you know, the company's got to feel good. The person buying the product's got to feel good. We've got to feel good. And we've got to do whatever it takes to make both ends feel like they came out on top. Even if we sometimes have to take it in the shorts, if it's the right thing to do, we got to do it. If it's not the right thing to do, we got to walk away.
But Kelly, if it's the right thing to do, isn't that going to come back to you? Because more than likely, they're going to have their mind blown. They're like, this guy went not only above and beyond, he overpromised, he overdelivered. Let's say you follow up, not just to ask him for another sell. Maybe it's a high ticket item. Hey, so how's it going? Happy birthday. How's your family? They're going to be mind blown. And if you ask for a referral, if you create raving fans, they're all going to want to see you win because you help them accomplish something.
Yeah, when I built my financial services company, I built it from nothing to almost $100 million in assets under management in 3.5 years. And I did it by creating family. And I remember I went to a seminar one time somewhere, and somebody talked about how to develop your, and now I think they call them avatars, or not your avatars, but your perfect client. And I went back to my staff and I said, hey, listen, I want you guys to all write down who are your 10 favorite clients. And there's no criteria, just who are your 10 favorite clients. And then we sat down in a meeting and there were six of us on staff. And so of the six of us, we had seven clients in common. Okay, we all had three different people for whatever reasons. Mine actually had to do more with money than the rest of theirs. And I said, now, those seven clients, what do they have in common? Why do we like working with them? We went around the room and we talked about why each of them liked working with that client. And we built our persona for the type of client we were going to go for the next 5 years in marketing. And these clients were all family-oriented, Christian-based, they had certain things in common, they didn't micromanage. And so we took all the characteristics and we said, this is our perfect client, this is what we're going to build our business around, and then this is how we're going to market. And one thing all those clients had in common is they love to get together and mingle. So we would just have like surprise birthday parties for the clients. We sent reminders to the husbands. Hey, your anniversary is coming up in 2 weeks. Have you got your wife the anniversary present? You know, things like that. And just to let them know that you care, you know, and call them up on their birthday, send them flowers, send them cards. You know, again, it's follow up. It's not follow up with the direct purpose to make another sale, because we've already made the sale. We've got 90% of all their money. But the bottom line is, it's you still have to, not only after you close the sale, but you got to continue to close the sale. Let people know you care. I kind of retired from the financial services world over 5 years ago. I still get clients that call me for advice and I still help them. I don't get paid for it, but I got paid in the past and it's the right thing to do. And you've always got to do the right thing. And it will come back tenfold.
Well, two things. Congratulations on serving.
Thank you.
Serving in Vietnam, especially. I mean, I was very small, but I remember history books saying, you know, it was like one of those weird times. And two, man, congratulations for making it in the financial services for so long. I was a financial advisor for like 4 years, and it was like, holy smokes. I felt like at times like I was a Jehovah Witness, because everybody saw me coming and like, oh my God, this member is going to ask me for money or for an appointment, or he doesn't really want to join the Kiwanis Club. He just wants to, he wants our business.
Yeah. I was fortunate. I had a really good mentor, man. I got to tell you. I'll tell you if you want to hear a funny story.
For sure. That's what we're here for.
Yeah. One of my beliefs is I'm really good at mirroring and matching, right? So I learned a long time ago, don't try to reinvent the wheel. You know, find a mentor and do what they do and do it exactly what they do. So I had this financial services mentor and I said, hey, Paul, can I go on the road with you for a week? I want to see what you do. And so I watched him give presentation after presentation in the financial services industry. And I was home one day, and I had recorded a couple of my conversations, and I had recorded him in a couple of his conversations. And so I was going through my scripts, you know, like, look, we all have scripts. Everybody says they hate scripts, but, you know, none of us were born speaking the language that we were born. It was scripted and we learned it from somebody, right? Normally our parents. So as I'm going through the script, my wife goes, Kelly, when did you start stuttering? I go, I don't stutter. She goes, yeah, you do. I go, no, I don't. She goes, you were just stuttering. I go, I was not stuttering. She goes, listen to the tape recorder. And so I played it back and I listened to it and I went, oh, that's where Paul, who used to stutter, stutters in his presentation. And what happened was I had mirrored him so much that when I was giving the presentation, I actually stuttered in the exact same spot he used to stutter.
Well, that's the reason why if we move to a different part of the country, we start picking up the dialect. Because subconsciously, if you're surrounded by people that can't say water, they say wada, you're going to start saying wada, and it's going to be subconsciously. That's why it's a big melting pot, this whole country. And then there's other areas of the world that they same country and they speak differently. And then you just pick up the dialect. But people don't understand too, mirroring is a good thing, because once again, when you mirror somebody that's successful, if I want to own a pizza shop, a successful one, I would ask a mentor that I would think that was way ahead of the game, super successful, has a bunch of stores, ask him if you know, he could mentor me. And lo and behold, you mirror other people that are successful.
Absolutely.
You just shorten the time. And you won't do the same mistakes. And time is the number one resource that we can never get back.
Right. You know, if you ever read the book Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, Napoleon, in his very first, I think it was his very first interview with Carnegie, he wanted to sit down with Carnegie and find out, you know, what made him successful. And Carnegie told him, don't mirror what I did right, learn what I did wrong, and don't do it.
I like that.
Yeah. I mean, in all reality, and, you know, 43 years in sales industry and managing multiple businesses and being successful most of the time, you know, you learn what not to do, right? You eventually do learn really great habits, like how to hire people properly, how to motivate people, you know, how to engage with people when you're nose to nose, toes to toes, one-on-one sales. But I think what you learn eventually is what not to say. I know I used to be on a lot of stages in the financial services world, and I was on a lot of panels, and I had a friend, Richard, probably one of the top financial producers in the world, bar none. And Richard and I would be on a stage, and we would get these goofy questions like, how do you handle this objection? And we'd look at each other and we go, we don't get that objection. Because I learned, you know, in every sale, no matter what you're selling, you normally have 1, 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 primary objections. So if you don't want to overcome those objections at the end of the sale, which is really freaking hard, you learn to handle them in your presentation. You learn to bring them up so they're not brought up by the clients, right? And then you show them how you can solve that problem, and then they don't come up at the end.
Well, price should always be brought up at the very beginning, correct?
Absolutely.
Why is it that so many people, isn't that the number one qualifier? I mean, can this person afford this? Is this too low or is this too high of a product for this person?
Right. Well, an example yesterday, my wife was talking to a client on the phone and she asked a question. And after she got off, which is always fun, by the way, when you spend 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with your wife, you're a sales coach or trainer, and she's taking a sales call and, you know, okay, I've got to help her. So I said, why did you ask this one question? I go, because you let the client say what they wanted to spend without you setting the stage first, Like this client wanted to spend $1,700 a month. Well, in all reality, that's never going to happen. They need to be around 21, 22, 23. I go, what you probably should have done is frame that and said, hey, based upon what you're looking for and the area in which you're wanting to be, you're probably going to have to spend 21 to 2200, maybe as high as 24. Is that comfortable for you? Is that what you were thinking? Now, if they were thinking 17, their mind's already up here to 18, 19 by now, right? You've already got a $200 bump. But if you let those words come out of their mouth, that's now the ceiling, and you got to deal with that. And that's probably not going to happen.
Well, once that becomes the ceiling, it's hard to break.
Yeah.
That ceiling.
So you got to set the ceiling up here so that when you come down and they come up again, it's a win-win situation. I think I used to call it setting the stage, right? You've got to frame it so that you realistically, they know what they're looking for without giving them hope. Hey, look, there's no way we can get you $1,700. They don't want to hear that. And you don't want to say that. But if you set the stage first, they're already going to start thinking. And that's why, you know, if you go to a lot of these events where there's, you know, hundreds or thousands of people online or live, and they do that quote value stack, which I always find phenomenally fascinating.
I love those.
And I'm going, all right, so there's $88,000 in value stack. They're going to sell this for $9,500 or $899. It's 99% off.
There has to be, you know, a time limit. You have to have urgency there. You have to say, but only for today.
Yeah.
you're twisting our arms. This is only for today. You better buy it today only.
And until you get about 18 emails over the next 5 days where it's still making that offer, right?
Exactly. This is the last one. You know, I love that one. But yeah, no, it's sense of urgency. Well, here I have to tell you this, Kelly. Congratulations again on being able to work with your I was an entrepreneur for 20 years. My ex business partner was my ex wife for like 17 of them. So it's being in a relationship's hard, but it's sometimes it's way harder when if your business partner is your spouse as well.
Yeah, you know, so let me tell you how, I won't tell you how we met, because that's a story for another time. It's hysterical and how I proposed. That's a really hysterical story. But when we got married, I had just got rid of my financial services business. I was looking for something new, and I traveled with a company called Remote Year. I was really intrigued by Tim Ferriss's book, The 4-Hour Workweek, right? And I wanted to travel the world, work, live in different countries for a month at a time. And so I found a company that could accommodate my needs. And so I traveled with them and came back to the States to get married to my wife. And I was on a 2-year journey, and I cut it short. And she asked me if I wanted to get into the real estate business with her. And I said, oh, good Lord, no. I hate real estate salespeople. They're the worst salespeople I've ever heard in my whole life. And when I sold my last house, I had actual video cameras, and real estate salespeople would literally meet their client at the front door. Oh, nice to meet you. Like, they wouldn't come in and preview the house, which you think they would get to know what to sell in the house. They would literally walk in the door, point at the kitchen, and say this incredible statement. Here's the kitchen. Like the dishwasher, the refrigerator, the stove, and the counter with the sink wasn't a clue that it was a kitchen. Then they'd say, go ahead and walk around the house. Come back and tell me what you think. I did this for about a week, and I called my agent and I said, stop the insanity. Nobody's going to show this house but me. So next time somebody came up, I told the agent, let me do the selling. Do not say a word except to your client. So they came in, and the first thing I did was I said, oh, hey, wait a minute. Do you guys hear that? And they looked, and they, hear what? I go, you guys don't hear that noise? They go, no. I go, are you sure? They go, yeah. I go, well, the dishwasher's on, and so is the garbage disposal. They're the quietest garbage disposal you can buy, And the dishwasher is the quietest dishwasher you can buy. So when you're in the kitchen, you can run the dishes and the garbage disposal and still watch TV, and you can't hear it. And then I walked them through the house and I did the feature advantage and benefit. I gave them the ultimate benefit. I talked about the view. I asked them questions. I got them involved. That person paid me all the money for the house within a week. Because I put on a demonstration, I put on a show, it was showtime, and I wanted to show all these realtors how to really sell. Then, so I told my wife, no way, I don't want to get into sales. And then I said, but I tell you what I will do. Let me help run your business. Let me train you, and I'll make you the top 2% of all retail salespeople in the United States within less than 5 years, maybe like three. And we hit that in 3 years. She's now one of the top 2% of all real estate agents in eXp Realty, which is almost 90,000 agents now across 20 some odd countries. She's the number one, she's in the top 1% of all realtors in the Arizona, in the whole state of Arizona. And we've done that by designing our life and our business on our terms. So we can, like, we travel probably close to 50% of the time we're gone. Like, we're leaving tomorrow for Spokane, Washington for a reunion. Then we're going to Cabo for a week. In the meantime, we're running the business and the business keeps producing and we keep helping people. So it's, you know, it's, I think life, people don't really plan out their life and really kind of figure out what they want and how they're going to get there and how sales can help them do that so easily if they know their craft.
Well, you said it best right there. Realtors, most people go into real estate because they just see the commission. And it's an easy entry. You can do it online these days or just show up to Gold Coast School throughout the country, whatnot. Take a course. You pass. Oh, well, all I need is a couple of business cards. Have a good smile. And let me be your listing agent. And there's two types of real estate agents. Those that know how to sell and those that within the next 3 years will be in another industry.
Yeah. You know, Omar, I think that's realistically, I think if you were to look at the numbers all across the board in every industry, right? There are people that take their profession seriously as a profession and they work at it all the time. You know, you take a look at Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was the last to leave practice. He was the first one there every morning. He shot thousands of baskets and he became the best. Same, you know, whatever. I mean,
it's all fundamentals. Every practice he would start with a bounce pass, the easiest and the most fundamental. But that would to be a better salesperson, you have to practice. And it can't be like you and I just doing scripts over and over, and you know, you be the mean guy next door. I go door knock, and you go, no, I'm not interested. It's a process. To me, the way you become better is you get up off after every no. You just shut that off, man. Because so many people, oh my god, I've had to, you know, their day's ruined because they did a presentation and it didn't go their way.
Well, you know, I tell you one thing I learned a long, long, long time ago, and I used to do this when I was training salespeople in the financial services world. I'd take them on the road with me for a week, just like my mentor took me, right? And I'd say, hey, you and me, we're going on the road. We're going to sleep in hotels. We're not sleeping in the same room, but we're sleeping in hotels. You're going to go with me and you're going to watch. And I would eventually start having them do the presentation. And the first thing I would do, so we did this in the military, right? Like after every operation, you have a debrief. Right. In a debrief, you want to know what was your goal? What was your plan? Did you achieve it? What did you do right? What did you do wrong? What could have been done differently to get a different result? And I would do that after every sales call with every rep. And I'd say, okay, tell me what you think you did right in that meeting. They'd normally tell me two or three things, and I would agree. And then I would say, and I think you also, and I'd pat them on the back. Because I think everybody needs a pat on the back and a kick in the butt. They're 6 inches apart, just sometimes to different degrees. And then I would tell them a few more things they did correct. And then I would say, now tell me the things you probably could have done better to maybe get a better or a different outcome. And we'd go through that. And then I'd say, and I also noticed this and this and this. And then I'd ask a few questions like, at this point of the sale, why did you bring this up? And what were you, what was your anticipated results from asking that question? And we would just sit there and go over everyone. And then I'd just kind of roll their lip and say, okay, on the next one, don't do these three things. Do these things again, but maybe do this a little bit different and let's see. And you just got to give them the freedom to go in there and do self-improvement. And, you know, you do that about four times a day, 3 days in a row. You see some pretty big changes in people that can handle constructive criticism and they can realize, okay, yeah, okay, I see what you're talking about. And then I'd say, watch me in the next presentation. And that's what I see a lot of sales trainers. They may be great trainers, but I don't ever see them toes to toes, nose to nose with a real client really trying to close deals or grabbing somebody and say, let me take that phone call. They call me Uncle Kelly in our business. They say, let Uncle Kelly call them because we can't seem to make stuff happen.
But sometimes too, though, usually in the sales organization, the sales team, the main guy, the lead guy, is just there based on longevity. Yes, he's a great sales guy. That doesn't translate to a great leader, a great instructor, because he's wired. It's like the great player in sports. He's wired completely different. He just always on, and he doesn't understand how how can this guy be in the red? How can he be having a bad quarter, a bad week? Why can't he just sell? So that's why sometimes when you're like, why can't he just jump in? It's because he's like, I've been here, you know, I'm up here. I expect you to be up here.
Well, in like Omar, what you're really bringing up here is the fact that in business owners or in marketing teams, right? What do they normally do with a top salesperson? They promote them to management.
Which all is always so mind blowing, because if they're bringing in the revenue, why are you going to cut that off? Why you're beating yourself up? To be vulgar, it's like grabbing a hammer and hammering your nuts. I mean, this guy's your breadwinner, and you're going to give him a promotion, and he's not going to be out there in the field. He's not going to be out there handling the calls. Well, yeah. Congratulations. Now you replace your star with an unknown, an unproven person, usually.
Yeah. You know, I know when I used to go into car dealerships, my job was to go into a dealership, turn it around. And I got tired of cars after a while. Oops. I always knock this doggone thing off. I got tired of going and working retail all the time. I was having my first kid, so I decided to go into the boat business. Somebody hired me from Bayliner Boats, and I took them from basically this dealership in downtown Newport Beach, basically going bankrupt. They couldn't sell boats if their life depended on it. They had a horrible penetration on finance, and they had virtually no warranty penetration at all. And I took them to number one in the world in 1 year. And I did it because, number one, I knew one thing. I don't know how to run a boat. I don't know how to start a boat. I don't know how to drive a boat. All I know is when people buy boats, they're buying fun, F-U-N. And they're buying fun with the family, or they're buying fun fishing or jet skiing, water skiing, whatever it is, wakeboarding. And I went in and looked at the numbers and fired three of the top four salespeople on the spot because they just had absolutely no clue. I brought in all brand new people that were just excited, right, about doing something new, fun, and different. Made the work environment fun. And we sold more boats in 9 months than the top three Bayliner stores in the country combined for a whole year. And at that time, they were owned by, not EMF, but the people that own the bowling leagues, whatever that is. They own Bayliner Maxim boats and a couple of others. And they came out and they wanted to know, like, how are you doing this? And they took me to San Diego and they tried to have me steer a yacht And I turned the yacht backwards going out of the harbor, and I made it to the front page of the San Diego Union, and the headline said, "The pointy end goes forward." And they were like so blown away. They go, "Well, you don't even know how to run a boat. You don't know the first thing about boats. How can you sell so many?" I go, "Because I understand one thing, sales. I understand people are looking for boats for one thing, fun. And what do we sell? Fun." And we made it easy for them to buy, easy for them to demo. If it was the right thing to do, then we owed it to them to close the deal. And we did. And we spot delivered boats, unheard of in the boating industry. And every boat went out with a warranty if I had to eat the cost of the warranty, because I wanted happy customers. And if anything went wrong with the boat, and if you've ever owned a boat, you know something always goes wrong. I wanted it to be covered under warranty, and they didn't have to come out of pocket, because that was the right thing to do.
Well, the right thing to do, like what they say too, the two most happiest days, the first day is when you buy a boat, and the second
you sell
day
it.
You sell it.
But, I know that all too well, bro.
It's usually an ego thing, you know, or, hey, I'm coming across some money. Hot chicks dig boats. It's always that. If you're looking at practicality, I mean, nobody's like, "Well, you know, for practical reasons, I really do need this boat." No, there's zero practicality. You could always lease one. You could always rent one for a day or for 4 hours or whatnot. It feeds the ego. It's to find significance. But hey, man, if I could have a yacht, trust me, we'd be doing this. I'd be doing this interview from a yacht with my all-female captain and crew.
Well, speaking of yachts, I mean, Grant Cardone's in Monaco this week, and he's on a super yacht and posting every day.
Yes.
Grant and I come from the exact same background. In fact, if you've ever listened to Grant Cardone, he talks about borrowing money from his mother to buy a sales training course. That was from a guy named Jackie B. Cooper, who was one of my sales trainers. And I worked for Jackie for 3 years selling seminars. Grant actually bought that tape series, which it was on tape, from my company, because we had the exclusive rights to the whole West Coast. We sold every car dealer in Los Angeles. So Grant and I were at the same spot in 2010. He's done a little bit better since that time than I have, because he learned one thing: marketing.
Oh, marketing. But he's more than 10x'd it, because I was aligned with GC literally right before the first 10x growth con. I was one of the first investors in Cardone Capital before it was called Cardone Capital. And I would have never thought in such a short amount of time that he would have been like, "Man, that's Grant Cardone." To what? That's Uncle G. That's the undercover billionaire
with Blackstone right now. Blackstone's the largest private equity firm on the planet. They've got $1 trillion under management, and he's going toe to toe with those guys.
Yeah, but when he was first talking about that, you know, I've been to so many of his seminars and his pitches. At first, it would just be like a snicker and like a smirk, like, "Okay,
yeah,
okay,
right,
DC." Wall Street's concerned about you, or they'll know your name in no time. You know, BlackRock will know you in no time. And now it's like, holy smokes! That, you know, he walks the walk, he talks the talk, and that's that's somebody. What separates all of us from that is, he not only believed himself, had complete faith in himself, but he expanded his vision. He expanded his imagination. The reason why somebody only makes $40,000 a year and they're stuck at that $40,000-$50,000, they stop dreaming. They don't have goals. They're like, "I can't do any better. This is it.
You know, that's why I know that when I do my 5-day challenges, or I do any sort of, you know, like live event, I spend an inordinate amount of time really going over mindset and lifestyle and, you know, picking big, hairy, audacious goals, BHAGs as they call them. but also coming up with a plan on a daily basis to actually accomplish those goals. I learned a little, I don't know if it was a story, whatever, but years ago, I climbed Mount Rainier. And if you ever want to climb a mountain like Mount Rainier, which is, by the way, the one they practice on to climb Mount Everest, you always want to start climbing at 3 a.m. in the morning. And for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's an arduous trek and you want to get up and you want to get down before the heat of the afternoon because avalanches occur. We left about 2.5 hours late. It was about 6 a.m. And we're going up the mountain and it's starting to get hot. And, you know, the snow is starting to get really weird and it's becoming really hard to go through the snow. And you keep getting higher and you think you see the top of the mountain right in front of you. And you realize it's just another ledge and you got to go further. And I made it like so far up the mountain. And I just said, man, I don't think I can do this anymore. I just sat in the snow and I turned around all defeated. And I looked down the mountain and went, oh, crap, look how far I've come. And that's what we as people, we as owners of businesses, we as salespeople, we don't always look at how far we've come. We don't really know what our baseline is. We don't have our big, hairy, audacious goal, and we don't have the stepping stones in between. But once I sat on the snow for a minute and looked down and saw how far I came, I said, I ain't giving up now. I'm like, I'm right there. I got to keep going. And a lot of people, they don't look back. They don't see how far they've come. They don't congratulate themselves for the work that they've done. And then get some renewed energy and keep going forward and plugging forward because they don't really have that goal specified at the end and the big why behind that goal. And I think where people get lost in sales is they just don't have any of that. They're just out there winging it. They don't have a game plan. Nobody's really mentored them. They don't have, look, everybody's got scripts, right? As a salesperson, we all have scripts. Every one of us. Some of our scripts are worth 40, 50 grand a year. Some scripts are worth 100. Some scripts like Grant Cardone are worth $10 million a year. You get to decide what script you get to use. Some scripts are just tougher to memorize and internalize. And that's the thing. If you're going to use a script, you got to internalize it. You got to make it yours. I used to train people like your wife or your spouse should wake you up in the middle of the night and ask you a question. And you should be able to answer it like that without thinking, go right back to sleep.
That's when you're completely immersed.
That's right.
But you said it best. How you have to believe in the product. You have to be fully committed to the item that you're selling, whether it's a service, whether it's an item. People aren't even sold on themselves, but yet they're going to have to try to sell themselves to other people.
Right.
Like you have to have that, you know, that conviction that I say it's like the John Travolta effect in Saturday Night Fever. That you have to have that confidence, you have to have that swagger that, you know, you are it, baby. You know, you're gonna have a dark existence if you don't hire me.
Yeah. Let me tell you a sad story. I had a client come to me a number of years ago, and she came to me, she had a bunch of stock. It was all AT&T, what they call Baby Bell stock. It was like, but that time they had diversified or broken up. And so she had, I don't know, 9 different stocks. She had over $1,100,000. And up until that point, you know, they had never really lost money. And so she came to me and I did a really good job of presenting what I would recommend doing, why it would work for her. But one thing I didn't do is I didn't try to close her. Right. So she left and I was thinking she'll probably come back, which she did 5 years later. 5 years later, she comes back. She's less now than $500,000. And she comes back to me because now she realizes I probably told her the right information. And she wanted to try to figure out how to make her money back. I told her that's probably not going to happen. But I did another really good presentation. Again, I didn't close. She left. 5 years later, she comes back. Now she's broke. And she's asking me if I know of an attorney who can do a reverse mortgage on her home because she can't afford to stay in the home anymore. She's broke. Now, I will tell you to this day, whenever I'm with a client, I think back to that story. If I would have done my doggone job If I would have closed her, she would still have that $1 million today. She would have gotten the best advice. She would have been with the best companies. She would have been what I believe was the best rep who had her best interest at heart. And she would have been in an infrastructure around a lot of other people in a similar situation as her, so that she would have had community. And I didn't do my damn job. I didn't close the sale. And I think this is where a lot of salespeople go wrong too, since they don't make the greatest sale, which is the sale to themselves. They don't own the same products they're trying to sell. They don't believe they're the right thing. It's like, if you knew you had the answer to cancer, would you not want to force everybody to take that magic pill and cure them? Sure you would. But we don't. We have the cure for what ails these people. We have the solution, but we don't close them because we don't want to be pushy. Hey, if it's the right thing to do, and it's the right product, and it's the right service, you better close them, because they're going to go down the road. They're going to buy an inferior product from an inferior company, from an inferior sales rep. They're not going to get good service. They're going to get inferior service, and it's going to be your fault because you didn't close them.
Those that believe that, they don't want to be too pushy, they're going to be struggling in every aspect of their life. And that's a fact. And what they don't understand, I feel like I'm upselling. I don't want an upsell. Phew, I'm so glad the last time I went to a movie theater that person wanted me to spend an extra 39 cents because it's only 39 cents for the large. Or, oh, thank you, waiter, for making sure I had that extra glass of wine or a drink. Or thank you for telling me to order the amazing dessert beforehand because it takes too long to prepare. Thank you.
Oh,
thank
I know.
You for looking out for me.
You know, when I used to run retail men's and women's clothing stores way back in the 70s, believe it or not, I would train my staff. I go, look. You get a guy coming in and he's probably got a date this weekend. He wants to look good. And you're going to sell him a brand new pair of jeans. Are you really going to let him walk out of the store with a brand new pair of jeans and put on that old sloppy shirt that doesn't fit, that worn out ugly belt, the really ugly, stupid socks, and a horrible pair of tennis shoes? Or are you going to dress him to the T so when he goes on that date, that gal's going to go, oh, wow, this guy knows how to dress.
Hopefully he's the right horoscope sign too, since you said he's a
Oh man.
You see, I could have made it in the 70s. Dressed apart. Yeah, hey, I'm Omar. I'm a Leo, by the way. You know, I could speak to you just because not only are we like-minded people, but we know the sales process. There's nothing salesy about that. That's like saying you're breathing too much. You're existing in life too much. You're making people laugh too much. No, it's sales is 101. Everything that we do, it makes gravity is sales. It's, you know, everything around this, everything is a pitch. Everything is connection. Everything is about trying to get the other person to agree with you, selling 101. But here, we haven't mentioned this. I know you're looking to find people to help them become millionaires, which is
yes.
Great. The way the stock market's going and inflation, you might have to up that to 2 million or 3 million. So just because inflation's going way up. But before, why is it because you do live in service and you want to see people in abundance? And is this something that's always driven you?
It's always driven me, Omar, to serve and to help people. Like, I would get phone calls from financial services institutions and say, hey, man, would you come and give your presentation on music that we saw, or your presentation on opening night performance or whatever. And I would do it for free. Why? Because I love to hear stories. A guy came up to me. My wife and I were at a conference in Miami at the Trump Doral Resort, actually. And a guy comes up to me, he goes, "Hey, you're Kelly Shaw." And I go, "Depends. Are you with the IRS?" And he goes, "No, dude, I saw you speak in Nashville like 8 years ago. I still remember your story about the chicken and, you know, about opening night performance and about, you know, frothing at the mouth." And I went, "Really?" I go, "8 years." He goes, "Dude, I use that in my practice. I'm one of the top financial advisors in my region in from Arkansas." He goes, "I'm in the President's Club every year." And he goes, "Man, I remember that workshop. I remember that seminar. I remember that speech you gave. It changed my life." Man, I got to tell you, I get way more satisfaction out of that than closing a $300,000 financial services deal, even though that pays really good commission. And when I met my wife, my wife's a Christian, and I've been a Christian off and on. I mean, probably wasn't as in-depth as I should have been for many, many years. And when things kind of went sideways for me, I had to get back in my faith. And one thing I realized when I got back in my faith was, look, it's all about serving. And I went back and thought about, when was I the most successful and probably the happiest is when I was serving the most. When I would give 110% and expect nothing in return. And so I decided, oh gosh, probably two years ago, you know what? People have been telling me for years, I got to get back to doing this. I'd taken life, you know, just kind of been enjoying life. I'd done really well for myself. But I said, you know, it's time for me now to be the mentor. It's time now for me to help people create and design a life of abundance. And when I talk to salespeople about becoming six figures, I'm not talking about 100,000, 200,000. I'm talking mid six figures to mid seven figure incomes, which you can all do if you put in the time, effort, and energy. You decide what you want to do and how you want to do it and commit to it and just keep plugging away, put your blinders on and just take it one step at a time. And I feel like at this stage of my life, which I'll be 69 next week. So I'm getting up there, but I still have energy. I still am like really motivated, and it's time for me to get out there and help create 10,000 millionaires.
But you know, where most of us, if we want to be Christians, just means to be more Christ-like.
Yes.
Be in service. Because last I checked, Jesus wasn't asking, well, so how much money does Lazarus have? Or how many followers does he have? Can I really get a lot of bang for my buck if I cure this guy of leprosy, if I raise this guy from the dead? Because being truly in service means to be Christ-like. Hey, we could all go, you and I can say we're Christians. Oh, well, we do go to service or we go to mass. I go to mass once a week. Then I post it on social media, but I'm a real jerk and I hurt people, but I am, you know, your act, your words always need to be aligned.
Correct. Yeah. We have a friend and acquaintance who wrote a great book called Quit Church. And it's all about, don't just go to church to go to church to say you went to church. It's all about service and giving back and helping out and, you know, walking the walk with Jesus next to you. And, you know, that's one thing I learned in 2018 is that he really is there to walk side by side with us and to help guide us. I know everybody, I don't really hear words from God, but I do get premonitions and I do get kind of a gut instinct. The gut instinct a couple of years ago told me, dude, you got to get out there and help people. They need help. And, you know, there's nothing in the Bible that says we actually should live in poverty. There's actually quite a few scriptures like 8:18 and 6:33 that talk about having faith, walking with God, and living in prosperity. And I think we owe it to ourselves to create wealth so that we can do wonderful things with that and to help mentor and shape other people's lives.
Well, if we're created in his image, it's to live in prosperity. I can't recall God saying, hey, I want you all to be middle management. I want you to suffer, get the crumbs of life. And when you said, you know, you had bouts that, you know, you're in and out, you know, to my opinion, Jesus was always there with
right.
you. Yeah. He was just like, you weren't paying attention, but I was always here for you, brother. Well, so no, go ahead. So, you know, like I said, you're being in service. That's what moved me. That's what motivated me to change my life. It wasn't right. always about chasing the almighty dollar. You wake up one day saying, is this all that life? You know, it is what it is. Usually people that have never experienced it will laugh, but it's not. You can say your goal is $10 million, but if you're living like Ebenezer Scrooge or you're living in scarcity, you're going to have that money and you're going to be the poorest rich person out there.
Well, I remember reading an article, this is probably back in the early 80s, where a guy did a survey of 1,000 people on their deathbed. And of those 1,000 people, not one of them said, I wish I would have made more money. I wish I would have had nicer cars. I wish I would have spent more time at work. They all said, I wish I had a better relationship with my kids. I wish I had a better relationship with my spouse. I wish I would have given back and shared. And I took that and realized, man, those are the things that are really important in life, right? When we die, nothing on this planet's ours anyway, right? I mean, it was all given to us by God. And God-given abilities to help create whatever. But the bottom line is when we go, we can't take any of that with us.
Well, the Egyptians would be like, hold that thought. We
True.
Well, tell us, how do we, are you helping people through a program, through seminars, through webinars, through coaching? How can all of us find you? How can all of us be part?
Well, the easiest thing is just to go to kingdomsalesacademy.com. I run 5-day challenges every month where we spend an hour a day, 5 days in a row. And I just go over all the internal things, all the simple things to selling without being salesy, sleazy, icky, and get them to understand the core principles of what it takes to be really, really, really successful in sales. We occasionally put on a 1-day live event where it's just a 1-day workshop seminar, very inexpensive, where we go into deep, deep, deep detail on a couple of parts of the sales process. And then we have a 3-month, once a month live coaching where we get together once a month for a full day. And then a weekly phone call. And so if they want to find out more information about what we do, how we do it, our next challenge is October 24th of this year. And they can just go to kingdomsalesacademy.com and sign up, register, and just go from there.
Well, thank you. And thank you for a lot of things. Thank you for being on. Thank you for spending an hour of your valuable time with me. A lot of nuggets. Thank you for your service. Thank you. Thank you for being a person in service. Thank you for living in abundance, helping others find the way, helping God's work of being a servant. And any last words for that person that's struggling, that's on the sidelines, that just keeps on waiting for something to happen?
Here's what I'll share. A friend of mine prayed every day for 10 years to win the lottery. Every day he prayed. Some days he'd pray twice. He prayed, Lord, please let me win the lottery. Please let me win the lottery. One day God spoke down and said, do me a favor, buy a lottery ticket. You know, we can all dream, we can all wish, we can all hope, but at some point, you got to get off your ass and take action. And I would say, I don't care what kind of action it is. Every day, work towards a better future because you only have today. Don't live in the past. Don't live in the future. Do today what you can do. Give it your best shot. And at the end of the day, reward yourself for doing a good job. And I want to thank you, Omar, for you being you and you having a platform for people like myself to get on here and share our vision with the rest of the world. Without people like you, we wouldn't be able to get our voice out there. So I want to say thank you very much, brother. I really appreciate it being on your show, man.
You made my day. And October 24th, don't be surprised if you see me sign up and just be part of your circle.
All right. Sounds good. Hey, the good news about that sign up, it's free. So
I'm looking forward, brother.
To really helping people, bro. I'm going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be really exciting. I can't wait to see if you're on there.
I'll be there. This is out there, not only on social media, but on Apple, iTunes, Spotify. October 24th, I'll be signed up to the challenge. I promise.
All right, brother.
All right, brother.
God bless.
Thank you. God bless you, man. Thanks.
Later.